We welcome you to Chat with a Cat. It's right here on KPAY Sports 1290 as we talk with an instrumental Chico State Wildcat, either a current Wildcat or a Wildcat from the past. It's brought to you by Carl's Jr. with two locations in Chico. Joining us this afternoon is one of my favorites. Out of the 25 years I've been calling Chico State baseball and basketball, this guy is one of my favorites. You won't meet a nicer guy. And when you get him on the hoops court, you won't meet a more competitive guy either. It is Amir Caraway, who helped the Wildcats win the 2014 NCAA West Region Championship, a 25-win season. And, of course, he has the most famous free throws in the history of Wildcat basketball. We will get to those in a moment. Amir, it's a pleasure talking to you, and welcome. It's great touching base with you again.
Hey, it's good to be back. Thanks for having me, Barker.
Absolutely. You know, you were such an instrumental piece, and it happens with a lot of the Chico State athletes that are standouts here. And then you graduate, you play your final game, and then we kind of lose track of a lot of the great players that came through the program. I know that you've been playing professionally for a long time. You've had a nice little career for yourself. What are you doing now? And talk about a little bit of how it came to be that you got to play professional basketball.
Well, I'm here in Sunnyside, Sacramento, California. Currently have my mom living with me right now, and we're just getting through COVID-19 in this pandemic. But life's been good. Been traveling the waters, like you said, and it has been a journey. I just turned 30 last week, and or last month, I should say, and I just couldn't believe the time's been on.
I know time goes. It really does. When you left Chico State, did you immediately go in and start playing professional basketball? What was that process? What was that process like?
So it was the spring semester. I had Coach Jordan Jones sit down with me. We cut some film, and I did want to play professional basketball. We had Jay Flores out in Mexico at the time, and Jason Conrad was just wrapping up his first season over in the Netherlands. And so both of those guys, even when I was at Chico, I had picked their brains and had asked them throughout college, you know, what that process was like, and just stayed in touch with them to kind of get a sort of a day by day of what to expect and you know, what's out there outside of the U.S. You kind of mentioned it before. Once we leave, there's not, you know, media coverage as much as, you know, like a sports center with, you know, our NBA, or even just having a Mike Baca get back to fans and let us know how we're doing over the waters. And there's really just an entire market out there, whether it's, you know, Europe, Latin America, or if you're, you know, in Australia, that is doing their own thing, and it was amazing. Me and Coach Jordan Jones broke down some film, and I did have a couple agents in mind, and I remember spring semester, while, like, usually on weekends, you know, we get into the, I guess, the Chico camaraderie, if you will. And I'd have to be doing interviews in the morning trying to find an agent that would kind of be a great fit. And end up doing, I think, 6 or 7 interviews. And the first guy I interviewed, I was the most sure of, and ended up signing with him. And he got me my first 3 deals in Germany. And it's been great ever since.
And so you played how many different countries have you played in during your career? You said 3 different contracts in Germany. Are those different leagues, different teams? And then did you move on to other locations? I thought I read somewhere, and I think we had a conversation at one of the Wildcat games, you played in Asia as well.
Yeah, so I guess breaking down year by year, I played my first season with Rasta Vesta, which was a Pro A team at the time in Germany. Pro A is the second division. The Bundesliga, or BBL for short, is the Premier League. A lot of NBA guys that come over. You know, you have Daniel Tice on the Boston Celtics, was a key player in the BBL. But the Pro A is kind of the second division of that. And you'll usually see, you know, mid-major Division I guys and a couple high one Division I guys. in that league. So I got roster vested my first year. I was a rookie, kind of came off the bench. The team was expected to compete for the championship and move up in the league. The way the overseas basketball works, it's very similar to the professional soccer system, mm-hmm. where the top two teams move up a division and the bottom two teams move down the division. So our team was looking to move up. We ended up having a lot of roster changes and coaching changes, and I made it through my first year. And so my second year, I ended up playing a league down in Pro B. I guess the market kind of said I didn't have much film on the table, and it was too unsure, you know, what kind of player I was. So I went down to the Pro B level where I played with Reist Wiedel in Germany, and got to really get a lot of major playing time. I went and became a veteran instantly in my second year. We were a very young team. I think I was the second oldest. Carried on from there, moved back up to the Pro A, where I played for ETB Wandau Baskets in Essen, Germany. Again, another veteran role. This time we weren't, we were kind of a bottom of the barrel team, but it was a great experience where I actually had the most fun with some of my American teammates that I keep in touch to this day with. Moving forward, we ended up changing continents, and I played for Cimarrones de Choco in Colombia. So my season in Germany ended, I want to say, in April or May, and I was out in Colombia by May-ish, June, probably the last week of May, where I got a pretty good deal as a key contributor to a championship team. Won my first professional championship down there. It was a four-month season where typically, you know, the German league competitions were nine-month seasons, really, really spread out, real traditional to like an NBA year, where Colombia's packed in real tight. We're playing games like an NBA schedule, you know, 3 to 4 games per week. So that was really intense and really fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said before, I got my first championship there. When we won that championship, what another tier that happens overseas is they do sort of like a League of Champions. So every champion from every country then kind of plays in its own, almost like a March Madness, if you will. So my team, Cimarrones, played in the Liga Sudamericana in 2017, where we advanced to the next round and played in Venezuela. We played against the likes of the teams like a Flamingo, a San Martin. Flamingo is like a meat board for the country of Brazil. You know, Leandro Barbosa, Nene, and Anderson Varejao played there, as well as that player that used to play with the Bulls, Cristiano Felicio, I want to say.
Yes.
They all play for Flamingo, so that was a really good time. We made it to the second round of that, finished in the final four of the region. I ended up getting, I think, an honorable mention honor, something like that, which then propelled me to go play in Chile, where I played with CD Valdivia. And, again, this time in Chile, this is 2018 now, our league finished in that Tournament of Champions around December time, and I wanted to leapfrog and play right away, but I was a bit tired from just the back-to-back years. And so I ended up taking about a month break off and got my first exposure into China, where I signed on to play in a couple 3-on-3 tournaments. I know McDonald's was a major sponsor for one of those, and it sort of put my stamp on the market out in China. And so I was out in China for maybe 2 or 3 months, and then ended up kind of calling it, not quits, but decided to take another break around March time to get ready for that season in Chile come fall. I went back to CD Valdivia, and we competed there. We had a roster change in December, and I was let go. I had my appendix removed at the same time, which is why I ended up leaving. But got all healed up and then went back to China, where I played for EGB Shenzhen from pretty much the start of January or February of 2019, and then I didn't leave again until about August, September of 2019. We had a mid kind of halftime season break where I got to come home for the States for about a month, which was fun, and then came back up to China to finish off the fall. And then I re-signed with my team, Cimarrones, in Colombia, back that fall season for 2 months. And we missed the playoffs. And then that was December 2019. Ended up getting some wear and tear from all the year-round hopping around. I'm 30 years old now.
You're an old man, Amir. You're an old man.
Oh, man. I was feeling it at 27. I tell you, we would stretch in Chile, and we had a trainer there putting us through a workout before practice. He's like, "All right, guys, let's get on the court." And I'm kind of looking at my teammates like, "You guys don't feel like you need another couple minutes of stretching?" And that's when I knew. I was like, "Oh, man, I'm getting much older." So ended up healing up that February of 2020, and I was just about to head back out to China to re-sign with my team in Shenzhen. And then we all heard the words COVID. And I looked into it, and long story short for that, I've been home since.
Yeah, yeah. And so I take it right now that you're just waiting for this thing to calm down a little bit, and you're just you're taking it kind of day by day until you deem it to be safe.
Most definitely. I mean, I just told you guys exactly what I've been up to the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, the biggest thing that I did miss and all that was the family time and catching up with friends. And I would say, you know, I'm very mindful. You know, we're all going through a lot right now with COVID. And the one thing that has been a positive is getting back in touch with family and friends. So it's been a blessing in disguise in that, I mean, me and my mom, when I came back home, I kid you not, we had moments where we sat and talked for literally half a day straight, just catching up.
Yeah,
I'm learning about things in the 80s and right before I was born in 91, some family history and just catching up. You know, you live with your parents for 18 years and it's time to go off on your own. And, you know, 10 years later, find myself catching back up and seeing what's new. So,
well, just getting to know your mom, that doesn't seem like a That doesn't seem like a rough thing to do, because that was one of the nicest ladies I've ever met in this business, and a parent of a player. She was just the sweetest. So I would imagine it was so amazing getting to touch base with her again, and especially for an extended period of time. And you're not alone in that, Amir. There are so many people, and I count myself included. The grind for the baseball, basketball seasons for me, there's no weekends there for 8 months. And I got a new little guy, you know, little guy, 5 years old, and he's like, "This is great. Dad's home every weekend. Dad's here. We can go shoot hoops. We can go play baseball." So it has been, in a weird kind of way. I mean, you can make something as miserable or as wonderful as you want. And I think you kind of make it. You kind of make good moments out of bad situations. And it certainly sounds like you did there.
Most definitely, and I will say, I've been looking on Instagram. You got yourself a sports fan there at the house. Your son is into it. I love it.
Yeah, he is very much into it. Yesterday, when Steph Curry knocked down that final three to win the three-point competition, I about glad I had secure windows. The kid was running all over the house, so it was great. And then, of course, in true child fashion, he created his own three-point competition with his Nerf hoop in the living room. So,
right on.
Needless to say, Dad was 0-for-3, and there was a little guy hoisting the trophy. We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Amir's maturation as a Chico State Wildcat player. When he got to Chico State, he was expected to be a fine player. They were excited about him. I remember Greg Klink talking about, "We really like him. We believe he's a multifaceted player." But I don't know if they expected him to become this type of player. A type of player would be a leader that would lead them to the Elite Eight. Amir Caraway joining us here on Chat with a Cat, and it's right here on KPAY Sports 1290.
The Big Carl has two juicy charbroiled beef patties, melted cheese, and classic sauce. It's what you order from Carl's Jr. when you want a big meal, a big, beefy, melted, cheesy meal. And with three juicy charbroiled beef patties, the really big Carl is back. It's what you order when you want a really big meaty meal, a really big charbroiled beefy meal, a really big beefy melted cheesy juicy tasty. You get the idea. The Big Carl and Really Big Carl at Carl's Jr. Feed your happy. Available for a limited time at participating Carl's Jr. restaurants. Price participation may vary.
We welcome you back to Chat with a Cat here on KPAY Sports 1290. Our special guest today is Amir Caraway. A standout basketball player for Greg Klink's program, helped lead them to the 2014 NCAA West Region Championship. We're going to get into his playing career because when he got here, he was expected to be an important piece to this program that Greg Klink was building. But I want to read a quote from former assistant coach Gus Arginal. Gus Arginal said about Amir, he says, quote, "He is one of the great transformations I've ever seen. From a freshman to a sophomore player. I'm curious to know, because when I talked to the coaches when you were a redshirt and when I talked to the coaches when you were a freshman and then when you jumped from your freshman to sophomore year, what was the biggest difference in your game as a player, as a teammate, and what happened there that made you, oh, I may be a guy that gets 10 to 12 minutes a game on a real good program, to I'm going to be a starter and a vital piece?"
Man, maturation and confidence, I would say. I know my freshman year, we had Rod Hawkins, the great Rod Hawkins. I think he was on the 1,000 club or the 1,500 club, who played over me. So I had a lot of learning to do, for one.
The greatest, the greatest undersized power forward I've seen in the conference. I mean,
you know what's funny about that is it took some CCA awards for me to figure out and for me to just go on the internet and find out Rod was 6'2". Like, I remember first reading that and then going into the locker room the next day and looking at him like, "You're really 6'2"? And he felt 6'6" in my eyes. Yeah. Rod used to dog me. And you can you can ask the guys about that. It used to be very bad. Very bad.
So yeah, you learned from your elder statesman. You learned from Roderick, and you know what's amazing about the program is there's kind of this lineage where guys learn from the guys that come in before them, and if they don't fight it, if they don't sit here and yes, there's healthy competition among teammates, but you can really learn a lot because you spend that year redshirting, and then you come in, and then you're competing. And you're watching how the guy in front of you is playing. Is that kind of how you learned it from Rod?
Oh, man, to say it in the nicest way, I'd say I learned the most. You can ask any guy on the team. My redshirt year was a tough one. I came in there a bit overly confident, but, you know, overconfidence is good. But the guys humbled me. We used to have this tracker of our wins and losses when we'd scrimmage in the fall. And just touching the bottom, the very bottom, was me in the loss column. It was very frustrating to see your name on there constantly, and whenever I could get second from the bottom, you know, that was a good day by me. But I remember always kind of starting out our scrimmage like, "Hey, let me get the first win, and let me get the second win, and let's see how many wins per day I can get and get myself from the bottom." And I think it helped me, you know, just moving on with my career, because you know, if you aren't challenged with that sort of adversity, when it hits you, you know, how are you going to react? And so even I remember after my redshirt freshman year, Coach Arginal and Coach Klink, we were doing the end-of-season meetings, and Coach Arginal just told me straight up, like, "Hey, we got Jordan Simple, we got Jordan Barton, we got Nate Appel. They just finished their redshirt year." I mean, even go back a year before, they told me they were coming in, and I'm like, "Man, these guys are playing my position. What's this about?" Mm-hmm. But you learn in college, we can be friends on and off the court, but you know, if you're not performing, the coaching staff and the team just wants the best for the team. So I had some work to do, and that summer, fast forwarding back to after my redshirt freshman year, I was just in the gym countless hours, just making sure that when we got back in that fall, I'd be ready to go.
You know, you look at your game, and I've always thought your game complemented what head coach Greg Klink tries to impart, because if you don't play defense in this program, you're not really going to fit and you're not going to play. I mean, it's just, yeah, I don't care. You can score 25, 30 a game. He may find a spot for you and hide you if you're scoring 30 a game. But it's not going to be a pleasant existence because there is an expectation on the defensive side of the ball with Coach Klink that must be met. The impressive thing about you and the impressive thing about the players that have gone on to play at the next level, whether that be Jordan Semple, whether it be you or other great players that have been in this program, Corey Silverstrom, who we interviewed last week, you can guard multiple positions. You can guard, if you got to take the point guard at the top of the key, you can do it. Oh, Amir, we need you to go down and guard the 6'10 guy down on the block. You took that challenge, and you could guard multiple positions. Was that something you could always do through high school, or is that something that you kind of just acquiesced to and it kind of fit your game once your body and once your game developed?
I'd say in high school, you know, I was one of the taller guys on my team, so I did have a little experience guarding big men, but I'm going to give all the credit to Coach Klink on that. I mean, he's one of the best basketball teachers I've ever had and best basketball coaches. Just even with his playing career at Chico State, you know, he always told us going straight in, like, look, I might not have been the best guy, you know, on the floor that night, but whenever I got in, you know, I wore my heart on my sleeve, and I just was ready for a dogfight. And that's just Coach Klink as a person, and that's the culture he brought to the team. So I'd say that just manifested, and it became contagious. Guys were communicating on the floor. Guys wanted it. And, you know, if you guys were following our senior year, if you just focused in on one of us, you just see constant lip movement. And we were just talking to each other. We had each other's backs. I remember we had this 2-3 zone where, I mean, we just really kind of made up what we were going to do. Like, we would switch when we wanted to if we saw our guy, you know, was getting beat or had gotten screened. And just the overall team camaraderie and the team locking in together to just get that single stop on that single possession was just something to be a part of, and it was really amazing.
2014, incredible run, and I'm going to go over the NCAA tournament with you because you were taking on an up-and-comer, a Division I program now in Cal Baptist. You guys get the win in that game by a score of 77-71. It was only the second NCAA championship tournament win in the program's history. Of course, I believe it was the year before you guys had won your first one when you went up to Bellingham. So you guys were fired up to get that win. After the game, Greg Klink said, quote, about you, I thought he did a lot of little things, unselfish things, to keep us in it when we weren't playing well as a team. Your quote after the game, to be honest with you, I was just thinking about how I didn't want it to end. I was getting a little emotional during the game. I didn't want it to end with these guys. I want this to last forever, end quote. You know, and then you play San Bernardino. They're hosting it. They're the top seed going into that second round game. The thing about San Bernardino is they were so very good offensively. They could really score it. They were huge. But I got this quiet confidence from you guys before the game. You felt you could defend them. And you really felt, as a group, you could score against them. You blew them out. You almost put a C note on them in the second round game. What was it about San Bernardino? Because I think if you looked at the squad on the court, you'd say, my goodness, look at the bodies on that floor for San Bernardino. But you guys really did whatever you wanted offensively in that game.
Yeah, I just think we never got our respect, man. Coach Klink coming into the CC2A, Chico State hadn't been playing too good, and I really do think teams took advantage of that. Like, they had heard about maybe the Chico State nightlife and probably thought it was an off day for them when they played against us. And, you know, I could see it in body language, and I know I took big offense to that, as well as everybody else on the team. And San Bernardino was kind of the start of that. I think we might have finished 500 with them my sophomore year, but that was always a game that I had on my calendar that I wanted to try and make a statement to the league, like, hey, Chico State is here. And as you just mentioned above, I think we did that.
The championship game, of course, will go down in the history books for the Chico State Wildcats. And what is really odd about this game is it really seemed, and it still to this day seems, that Stanislaus State, for some reason, was a bad matchup for you guys. It just, they had the big guy in the middle. Sam Marcus was ball control guy that just dictated the tempo of the game. As good as your team was, there was something about Stanislaus State, and they really worked you over in the CCAA Conference Championship Tournament game. They won the banner there, and then they come in as the 7 seed, and they're up by 18 points. They're blowing you out at the half. Greg, what does Greg Klink tell you at halftime of the regional championship game? You're getting crushed. They're dominating you the way they did a week earlier. What does he say to you guys?
Very similar to the Cal Baptist game halftime speech. Just look around, man. This is, you know, we're on borrowed time now in the playoffs. Do you guys really want to end this and the book close with this group of guys? Me, Sean Park, Nate Appel, Rashad Parker, Gio Estrada, Jordan Barton, Jordan Simple, and everyone else, Drew Kitchens. I can name the whole team. So sorry, guys, for not saying the whole team. But we didn't want to end, and we just locked in. If we don't look at the score, you know, we just got to play hard and fight. And kind of did some quick calculations. I'm a bit of a numbers guy, but I remember looking up, and I want to say we were still down, you know, 14 by 14 and maybe even 12 with 12 minutes left. And it's just like, hey, you know, 3 possessions. If we're a plus one after each minute, you know, we'll be in the game. And finally, we got to that 2.5 minute mark, and just remember, like, oh man, we need to get something going right now. And you know, a few possessions later, we could see Cal State Stanislaus kind of ease up, because you know most teams don't play hard till the end of the ticker. But well, again, with Coach Klink and how he's taught us to play till the whistle ends, we did just that, and we put ourselves in a position to come out and take that game.
Well, let me give you a number. There's 2 minutes and 48 seconds left, and you're down by 13. I mean, you could, and Greg Klink has told me this numerous times. He says, you know, our effort was so much better in the second half, but he goes, I looked up at the clock with 2.5 minutes to go, and we're down by 13. And he goes, I'm not gonna lie here. I was thinking about what I was going to tell this special group if they don't get this thing done, because I saw how hard they were playing, but it just didn't look like it was going to happen. What happened over the next 2.5 minutes, though, was some of the craziest stuff I've ever seen on a basketball floor. You guys kept making threes. They either missed a free throw or took a quick shot or inexplicably would turn the ball over. And even when you missed, you would get an offensive rebound. And it turns out you score 20 points in the final 2 minutes and 34 seconds. You get this thing down to a one-possession game. There's in the waning moments. And for some reason, Stanislaus State fouls Jordan Semple in the penalty with 5 seconds left. They didn't have to, but they grabbed him in a panic mode because they were completely frazzled and discombobulated at the end of this game. And so Jordan's going to the line. You are one of the first guys on the free throw line. You got a defender there. Describe the moment that Jordan's on the line. It's a front end of a 1-1. He's got to make the first to get the second. You're down 1, 80-79. What are you thinking as a guy on the waiting for Semple to shoot the free throw? I'm sure you're sitting there saying, Jordan, please make these, but are you making the contingency plan in your mind, Amir, if he doesn't, and what you're going to do?
Doc, I don't think I've told anybody this ever. I was furious. I actually wasn't even in the game at the time. I had just gotten taken out maybe a possession or two before. I think Jordan came in for me because we did need to get that stop, and we did need to probably foul them. I think I was in foul trouble at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sitting here looking at Klink like, what are you doing? This is my last year. Like, I need to be in here, and you know, I want to go home losing. and Jordan gets fouled. And I think I'm screaming in Cobb's ear. Coach Cobb is my guy. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yo, you need to tell him to put me in the game. I need to be in this. And I walk up to Jordan Simple, and I tell him, like, hey, man, knock this down. But if you do miss, I'm going to get the ball. Funny thing about our group is we put the pressure on ourselves at all times. If we were up by, let's say, a couple possessions and, you know, another team had to foul us, we'd walk straight up to each other and tell each other, like, I bet you missed this, and kind of jokingly just kind of get that fear out of the window. And so for Jordan, Jordan Simple has amazing confidence. And I asked him straight up, like, hey, you going to knock this down? And he's like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And I'm like, all right, we'll see. I was like, if you don't, you know, I'm getting the rebound, right? And so we had a little friendly bet like that.
Wait a minute. So, you're down one. Hold on. You're down one in the West Region Championship game. You're down one. And you guys do this throughout not just practice but games throughout the entire season. And you, at that moment, say to him, are you going to knock this down? Because if you don't, I'll get the rebound. I mean, you're still doing you're still prodding him with 5 seconds left, down one in a regional championship game?
Baca, when I say I have the most confidence in my guys, and when I say that 2014 team is one of the best Chico State teams of all time, it's things like that that make me confirm my thesis. Our practices were intense that whole year. And one of the reasons I think some of us weren't surprised that we came back is Coach Clint used to try and give us those same scenarios in practice. Like, we'd have, you know, the starters down five with 30 seconds left, or maybe we'd put 3 minutes on the board and we're down seven. And we'd go in there straight up trying to win the game. We always kept it interesting and very competitive in practice.
Okay.
And, you know, that's why even younger guys like a Corey Silverstrom and a Rob Duncan, I'm not surprised at how they flourished in the program because they were put in the same situation.
So Jordan Simple goes to the free throw line. When he lets it go, what are you doing? Explain the whole process of the free throw, the carom, and you getting the ball.
So I said that to Jordan to at least have him lock in because, you know, when you're on the side of that, you don't want to be wrong. So I said it to spark Jordan up, and I really did believe he was going to knock him down. But what I wasn't going to do was just sit there and stand straight leg and expect it to go in. And so, like, I'm hoping he makes it, but I'm fighting with my power. And I think it was Chris Head. I know his last name was Head on the Stanislaus team. I just tried to push him directly under the rim as much as I could. And the ball just so happened to bounce on my side. And so I just jumped up and grabbed it. And, you know, we only had about 1.8 seconds or something like that. And instantly I'm just thinking quick shot. And he got up under me, moved me back a little bit, and the ref thankfully called the foul. And so I had the chance to then ice the free throws.
And I got to ask you, because we've talked about this, and that official, his name is Ed Page. We've seen him he's been an official in the league for 20-plus years. To this day, when he is officiating a Chico State game, even if we think he might make a bad call, we forgive him. because he made that call. I got to ask you, though, because I was blocked out, and I've never asked you this. Were you fouled?
I was definitely fouled. The ref called a foul, I was fouled.
You were fouled? Okay.
Yes.
I couldn't see it. So when you grab the rebound, you go up and get it, and then you're putting it back up, you're saying that Chris Head, his lower torso, his hip, kind of undercut you, and it changed the trajectory of the ball coming off your hand.
Hey, you said it best. That's okay. What happened. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, it looked like it, because you jumped, and then your legs kind of came out, and the body, it looked like you kind of leaned his backside into you, so it hit your lower torso, and it did change how the ball came off, because you missed the putback, but you were fouled. Okay, now you're going to the free throw line. And this is it. You know, like, I don't know if we're going to be able to get a set. I'm not going to be there to get an offensive rebound. You're getting two free throws. You guys do this. I've been to so many practices. You take free throw after free throw after free throw, and he puts a lot of pressure on you guys. to make these in practice.
Dive and record.
It's kind of trite to say what's going through your mind, but what are you telling yourself as you step to the charity stripe with the whole season, the regional championship on the line?
I mean, exactly what you just said. I've been in this situation before where, you know, we just need to make two free throws, whether that's, you know, some conditioning drills after practice. I remember Terrence Pelham was an assistant coach for the Chico State basketball team for a season, and me and him, I wasn't happy with my free throw percentage, whichever season that was, and me and him would go over to Shermer, and we'd knock down, you know, 100 made free throws either after practice or, you know, if we didn't practice that day. Every day I'd get in there and do the 100 free throws. And so me and him would kind of do a little friendly thing where, you know, two free throws. And so I kind of got excited, to be honest with you, when I got to the line, because I was like, this is exactly, you know, what I've been practicing for. And this is a real life example of, you know, you have two free throws and you need to make them down. And then so I just try to really just remain as calm as possible and not think about it too much. Like, I was aware of the situation, but then I had to lock in and actually knock them down.
Did they feel good off the hands?
The first one felt a little funny. I want to say I'm pretty sure it hit the front of the rim.
Yes.
Then, like, hit the backboard and then went in.
Yes.
As soon as the first one went in, that was the relief.
Yeah.
Because just from, you know, muscle memory. And so, yeah, the first one was definitely the scariest one of the two.
The second,
I guess we would have been tied, but.
Yeah, didn't the second
knocking
one.
Knocking them both down was great.
Didn't the second one kind of. The first one was straight on, but it was a little short, hit the rim, got the shooter's touch, front rim, back rim in. And then I thought the second one kind of was off to the right a little bit. It barely skimmed the rim, but it kind of curled in. It wasn't like clean. Do you remember that?
Uh-huh. To be honest with you, once it left my hand, I remember, I'm pretty sure it was Jordan Estrada. We already were kind of calling our matchups up, and Jordan jumped to the ball or was already looking at the wrong guy. So I was trying to find who my man was, and so I couldn't remember that point, but
yeah.
If you could remember right after that, you know, they inbound the ball to Sam Marcus, and me and him are having kind of a quick, like, who's getting him, and, you know, he got a great look that was just online, and as heart-wrenching, I'm even just thinking about it now, my anxiety's going up a bit, but once the ball left his hands,
I know.
Both me and Gio were kind of thinking, like, I hope we didn't just do what we thought we just did. And as soon as that ball did not go in, everything just went, I almost blacked out after that. So everything just went crazy.
Well, Greg Klink and I had this conversation a couple of months ago, and I said, Coach, when Sam Marcus let that ball go from three-quarter court, did you have the same feeling I did? Because I was lined up pretty good. And he goes, Baca, I thought that thing was dead center. And it was right down the gut. He just missed it short by just a smidge. I mean, he almost made a three-quarter court shot after that comeback to win the regional for them. But he got a great look. So are you saying that you and Gio had a miscommunication on who was going to pick him up, and so it gave Marcus kind of a clean look?
I believe so. I think Walters was my matchup, and he ended up taking out the ball, or I think because he was taking out the ball, Gio went up to him, and so then I had to go up to Sam Marcus, and I was just like a quick, what are you doing? But we don't have time to really discuss this at this point.
Or to fix it.
And so, yeah, I just tried to have both my hands up, not foul him, and kind of just wall up and hopefully throw him off. And I think Gio ended up coming back in time. But, yeah, that was the longest, probably second and a half, but
yeah,
the longest one I've ever had to experience.
Yeah.
Until that ball went out.
That ball sails through the air sometimes, and you wake up in a cold sweat 5 years later going, oh, I hope it doesn't go in because that thing looked good. It is the greatest comeback. I mean, in Chico State history, you can look at there was a comeback also at Casulas Arena under former head coach Puck Smith, where his team was down an amazing 15 points with about under 2 minutes to go. But this one with the West Region Championship on the line certainly takes the cake. And, of course, it changes forever how you view Casulis Arena. It used to be a house of horrors down there for Chico State fans. For years, Chico couldn't win any games there. They got to cut down the nets there, so it certainly changes how you view it. We are going to take a quick break. I'm telling you, folks, we may be interviewing Amir Caraway, but I'm having more fun than I can possibly have here. It's reliving some of these amazing memories. When we come back, we will finish up our chat with the great Amir Caraway, one of the greats in Chico State men's basketball history. You're listening to Chat with a Cat. It's right here on KPAY Sports 1290.
The Big Carl has two juicy charbroiled beef patties, melted cheese, and classic sauce. It's what you order from Carl's Jr. when you want a big meal, a big, beefy, melted, cheesy meal. And with three juicy charbroiled beef patties, the really big Carl is back. It's what you order when you want a really big meaty meal, a really big charbroiled beefy meal, a really big beefy melted cheesy juicy tasty. You get the idea. The Big Carl and Really Big Carl at Carl's Jr. Feed your happy. Available for a limited time at participating Carl's Jr. restaurants. Price participation may vary.
We welcome you back to Chat with a Cat. It's right here on KPAY Sports 1290. We're speaking with one of the great Chico State men's basketball players, Amir Caraway, who turned himself not only into a standout player at Chico State, but a professional basketball player. And as he's been talking about in our nice little conversation here, he's played all over the world. Paying for play, and he has playing for pay, I should say, as he has been a standout at all levels. And right now, just trying to get through the pandemic like the rest of us. You know, I see you when you've got free time. You come and see the Wildcats when they're playing in the Bay Area. I've seen you up in Chico when Wessels and I are doing our post game. You keep tabs on the program, don't you? You keep up to date. You follow these guys.
Oh, most definitely. I'm a Chico State Wildcats fan first and foremost, just as much. So seeing guys like Malik Duffy come in the program, Isaiah Briggs, seeing my guy Brennan Wheeler, seeing my brother Robert Duncan, Corey Silverstrom, and Jalen McFerrin just shine throughout. It's been a sight to see the next Cats coming up, the next generation.
Yeah, and who would have thought? I mean, I know that there are a lot of people who say, and I've heard this from so many people, like, well, it's Division II basketball, and it's I do get sick of answering that question. I bet you guys do, too. And I said, oh, by the way, did you see the Arizona game a couple of years ago? Have you seen the last two, three times Chico's played Arizona, a top 10 team in Division I? And I say, oh, and by the way, Chico's got like 9 guys playing professional basketball who've played in the last 7 or 8 years. So I would venture to guess there's a lot of mid-majors at the Division I level and a lot of Division I major programs that don't have that many professional basketball players or guys playing at the next level. So I kind of fend that query off pretty easy when I get some speculation regarding Division II.
Most definitely. I bring up Arizona as a quick reminder to some, too, and also let them know, you know, our senior year, we couldn't get any Division I teams.
Right.
I'm not sure if that was by coincidence or not, but I remember the year they played against Lori Markkanen and that Arizona Wildcats team. Guys like Briggs, guys like Isaiah Ellis and Rob Duncan, you know, they came up to compete that day, and it definitely put Chico State back on the map again.
Yeah, and had a lead with 2 minutes to go, lost by 5. I remember and Sean Miller after the game saying, glad we don't have to face those guys again. Before we let you go and get into a little bit more, I do want to ask you, a former teammate of yours and a guy that so many of the Wildcats felt close to, recently passed away in a tragic shooting in the Bay Area. Former guard Powell Lee, and I know that he didn't have a ton of time on the court, but when you talk about Chico State being a family, they certainly are. And so when one family member is hurting or one family member is gone from us, it hurts all of them. And I wanted to give you a chance to talk about Powell.
Yeah, Powell Lee was a great guy for, you know, the Chico community and the Chico State Wildcat fans who didn't get a chance to really get to know Pal. I can compare him to, you know, a DeMario Sims. You know, he walks in the room, you're smiling from ear to ear. You hear, I guess, on the professional level, people kind of refer to players as, you know, a pro's pro. Well, Powell was, you know, one of the ultimate team guys and teammates I've ever had. I'll never forget, actually, it was my visit to Chico as a recruit. We ended up scrimmaging against the guys before I left. And to see Powell's ability on the floor, you know, 5'8", could shoot it, could dunk the ball, his athleticism. On my visit, you know, he was actually one of the best performers that day. And was one of the reasons why I did come to Chico, was to play with him. But me and him had, you know, a lot of conversations, you know, even before he left the team after my freshman year. And he always, you know, encouraged me to just keep working hard and to kind of play with pace. Powell loved the program, loved the coaching staff, loved the team. And, you know, that truly, you know, hit us home as a family. My condolences go out to his family, and we'll never forget the time we had with Powell. But that guy was just a light in the room wherever he walked. But whether it was on the court, you know, on campus or even off campus, Powell Lee was a man of the people.
It's interesting because there are so many guys, and I've talked to a few other Wildcats about this, that it's there are guys that bring energy to a group. And it's, you know, I always hear that guys on the end of the bench, oh, they don't matter. Or guys that, you know, that don't get a ton of playing time or put up the stats or get the publicity. They're not really, how important was he? He only played, you know, 50 minutes during the game, or during the entire season. And you can tell that when people say that, they haven't played a team sport. You can be almost rest assured that those people haven't really played at a high competitive level because they don't understand the energy that it takes for a team to compete at a high level. And if you've got bad energy or guys that primarily are pushing you during practice or who may not get a lot of playing time, if they're dragging the group down, whether it's subtle or overt, you can feel that as a primary player on the team. It is an energy. And I've always said sometimes the most important players on the team, in a lot of respects, when you've got a team full of really solid players, maybe not superstars, are the guys who are pushing them, who may be the 10th, 11th, and 12th guys on the bench, who bring that energy every day to practice. And I get the sense that Powell Lee was that type of guy. May not have
most
had,
definitely.
Yeah, it may not have had got a ton of minutes, but boy, he provided the energy every day in practice and off the court with someone you wanted to be around.
Most definitely. I mean, you said it best. I think what Powell thrived for us, you know, in his role on our team, us, he pushed Jay Flores every day, whether it was scout team, us having to get ready for, you know, a San Bernardino or a Humboldt State. Powell Lee took his role, Coach Clink, would kind of, you know, let the cuffs off Powell and say, hey, man, I need you to be you today. And Powell Lee, you know, as cool as he was, would kind of sit back and laugh and go, all right, let's go. And they had their battles. You know, everybody did get to see Jay Flores on the court shine and get that MVP season. And us as players got to watch the Powell Lee show during practice sometimes. Really just bringing out the best in all of us.
Yeah, and then it takes those type of guys to push you maybe to levels you didn't think you were able to reach. And you've kind of talked about it, how you were finishing last in all those scrimmages, but Roderick Hawkins kept pushing you and taking you to school every single day. And you he builds your mental toughness. You get mentally tough when you get your teeth kicked in every day. You're saying, you know, I've got to get better or else this is just not going to end well. I have to get better. And it's those type of guys that push you. And, you know, you don't hear the story about Powell Lee pushing Jay Flores and maybe getting under his skin a little bit and turning Jay into, like, getting him as competitive as he was, making him uber competitive. And so that's the kind of stuff that is so great about a program going in the right direction and having great teammates.
most definitely. Pauly was definitely a part of that. And I know, you know, speaking on behalf of the team, you know, we thank him for that. And we're going to truly miss him.
You have taken a bit of a break. So I have to say, right now, you still have plans to play professional basketball, but you're taking the break right now. Is there something that you're getting into right now that you, for life after basketball, are you kind of exploring those interests?
Most definitely. You know, I just turned 30 last month, and not getting any younger. You know, if I really wanted to compete or to say I played pro, you know, I probably have another 10 years I could play. I'm thinking about cutting that to about 5, just because, you know, the sport is brutal. It gets a hold of your knees, the stress, just the constant change in movement. But I've been kicking back to, I guess, my plan B. You know, I graduated in finance. I've been trading in the stock market very thoroughly now since, I guess, last June, and looking to get into the fintech industry, moving closer to that, moving into the fintech industry. Gonna wait till COVID kind of dies down, possibly before I return. But the jury's still out. Just looking at all my options moving forward.
Fantastic, Amir. It has been amazing catching up with you, talking about some of these great moments. And as I mentioned at the outset, one of my favorites. I mean, this is a guy. He brought it every night. And I've told Luke Reed this with Chico State Sports Information, and I've told, you know, Mike Wessels, and I've told everyone who's listened, if Chico State had a guy that reminded me of the great Larry Gordon from Cal Poly Pomona, and I don't know if your paths have crossed with Larry Gordon, but Larry Gordon played for Pomona during their heyday, and this was more than a decade ago, and he was a guy that averaged about 8 points a game, about 4 assists, 4 or 5 rebounds a game, but he was the best player in the league, by far, best player in the league, and he was the leader of that team, and I think he has had a professional career more than a decade. He has been playing at the highest leagues in Europe, and I've always said, if Chico State had a guy, Amir Caraway is that guy, because he reminds me so much of Larry Gordon, can defend any position, can play inside, can play outside, is crazy competitive, and is a great teammate. Will defer when it's time to defer, but will take charge when he has to take charge. I was always wondering if Chico State would have their version of a Larry Gordon. And I always said to myself, if we ever had a version of a Larry Gordon, the Wildcats will be in good shape. Amir Caraway, in my opinion, is that guy. So I want to thank you for joining us. It is a pleasure talking to you. One of my favorites. I miss you greatly. I miss your parents, because they would come to almost every game, and they'd come down, give big hugs after the game, and they were such fans. And say hi to your mom and dad for me. I miss them. And it was so great talking to you, Amir.
Hey, likewise, Buck. I'll do that. I look forward to seeing you guys next year. I'm excited about the season. I'm still tuning in to you as well, and Chico State fans and City of Chico. It's been an honor, and can't wait to see you guys soon, shortly as well.
Yeah, I'm counting down the days. I mean, we're talking. I mean, I know we're mid March, which means we are 7.5 months away, Amir, from tip off for the Chico State basketball team. That's how much I am already counting it down. I can't wait. I can't wait to get back behind the microphone. And trust me, my family saying, don't you have a game to do somewhere? Because we don't want you in the house any longer. So,
Hey, Amir. We're almost there.
We want to thank Amir for joining us. It's been brought to you by Carl's Jr. This has been Chat with a Cat right here on KPAY Sports 1290.